The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Episode of Full Court Press. I'm your host, Nick Smith, and we are presented to you, as always, by Geek Vibes Nation. And joining me tonight is Luke Alves. What up, Luke?
Not much, man. You know, excited. Finally, finals are about to start, you know. Finally, it's here. I can't believe a whole year's passed. Crazy to think that I thought my team had high hopes, and here we are, just, you know, finally down the road, and it's a lot of disappointment, but excited that, you know, the finals are finally here upon us.
Yeah, indeed. But I got to ask you, given that your team did not make it, how happy are you that the team that dispatched the Sixers and dispatched the team that beat your team made it out of the East?
I mean, I had them going, winning the East anyways before my team had dispatched,
yeah,
but it is
did,
great
right?
to see.
Yeah,
we both did. But it is great to see them that they actually prevailed. Crazy how they got here. I think it could have gone any way with the Sixers series. Ball just bounced four times in Toronto's way. If you really think about it, I mean, that's a crazy way to lose. And then for Milwaukee just to be taken care of by Toronto, Sixer fans got to be like, man, we're right there. If the bounce just went our way, we could have could have been a different story for us. But hey, that's basketball for you in playoffs.
Yep. Hey, yeah, you're right about that. But yeah, as for the Sixers, like, fucking roll it back, motherfuckers. Like, nobody be afraid to pay. Like, yeah, like, here's the thing, dude. You're gonna hate that Jimmy Butler contract in year like 3, 4, 5 if you have to do the fifth year. Tobias is going to lose any amount of trade value the moment he signs, wherever he signs. But, like, you don't have any other options at this point. You were that close. You've seen, like, from the conference finals how close you were. All the other top teams have the potential to, like, take a step back in the East. So, yeah, man, like, if you're the Sixers, you got to roll it back. You can't let either one of those guys walk. I mean, you just can't afford it. You made your bed. Now you got to lie in it. That's just the way it is. So we'll see what they do. I'll be really surprised if they don't, you know, bring both of those guys back if both of those guys want to come back. But, you know, we'll see how it plays out. I think the bigger question is what they do with Redick. Do they bring him back? Do they try to find a cheaper option? You know who would be great as a cheaper option would be Landry Shamet. But, yeah, we know where he is now. But anyway, let's jump into it. You know, I could go all day about what the Sixers need to do this offseason. But, you know, we'll go from, you know, maybe a partially dysfunctional front office to a utterly, entirely dysfunctional front office in the L.A. Lakers. Seems to be even more of a shit show than we thought. If you've read Baxter Holmes' article on ESPN.com, holy shit. Like, the amount of, like, people that he interviewed and like, the detail that he goes into in this article, if anybody, any of our listeners have not read it, I encourage you, like, go read that fucking article because it is fucking gnarly. And he also did a podcast with Zach Lowe the Low Post podcast. So go check that out as well. Very interesting listen to kind of hear him, you know, Zach Lowe, you know, kind of delve into that article and ask him questions about it. My big takeaways from this, Luke, one, Rob Pelinka, like, we all knew that, like, he had to go, but, like, God, I didn't know it was to this fucking extreme. Like, the biggest thing that got me, I mean, there's obviously the whole Heath Ledger thing, which is just, I think that's almost, that's more of a microcosm of the situation. The macro in this situation is having two different fucking war rooms when you're on draft night and having, like, almost all of your fucking scouting staff be surprised when you take Mo Wagner at number 25, and they apparently wanted Omari Spellman and thought that was who they were going to draft. And then for Pelinka to basically pin it on Josh Hart and say, like, yo, well, yeah, I talked to Josh Hart, and, you know, he brought up some things that that just confirmed some of my suspicions, and, you know, that he might not, you know, might not pan out, might not be good. And then, you know, obviously when asked for clarification, Josh Hart was like, dude, I mean, all I told him was, you know, I mean, nothing he couldn't see for himself, that, you know, he's a little out of shape, but he's got a really, like, hard work ethic. Any, like, that should not discourage a smart GM from making a pick based on basketball skill set, knowing what the NBA can do as far as conditioning. He didn't give him any information that he didn't already fucking know. So to, like, throw it out there and kind of pin it on Josh Hart was super fucking weird. And I feel like that, I mean, fuck, Josh Hart might not be there next season, so that might not matter. But, like, these are kind of, like, relationships that Pelinka's, like, cultivating there. It's just, dude, it's so fucking weird. I don't know how you can be arguably the most popular basketball team in the world and just be this poorly managed, this much of a shit show. And then, you know, the reports also come out about how Magic was, you know, essentially there were these two different versions of them. There was the Magic side and then the Irvin side, and you didn't want to catch the Irvin side. And, you know, people were afraid to say anything to anybody in HR or anything because, you know, that, well, obviously they're going to fucking take Magic side. That's not a good look either. I don't think that's as concerning, specifically speaking, because Magic isn't there anymore. So that's not as concerning as the whole Pelinka thing. But that's not a good look either. That's really, like, you don't want somebody there who, you know, basically can bully other people, and you don't want to cultivate an environment where people who go to work are afraid to, you know, object to any sort of actions that their boss does. Like, that's not a good fucking work environment. So yeah, man, I mean, those are kind of my two big takeaways from this whole article. What are your thoughts on it, and was, you know, what grabbed you in particular from this?
No, I mean, you took what I was going to say with the Magic side. I mean, I'll get to Blake in a second, but the Magic side kind of surprised me because we always knew it was a shit show, like, getting run last year. Just all the signs are on the wall. I mean, the people are signing. It was just like, everything was just like, what the hell is going on, like, in with Magic and Pelinka and everything in there. So he kind of, but the whole, like, the two different sides, like, what is he, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? Like, that's how I got to go to work now? Like, you didn't want to see the Urban side and, you know, all that. And, like, what really got my attention too was someone must have tipped Magic, and he was on ESPN, like, that night, and just trying to, like, you know, shape it for himself and, like, kind of, like, deny it and all that. And just, like, Magic, at this point, I don't believe you, because there's just so much that, like, you've already, what you did on First Take and all that and everything, and now like stuff's coming out about you, and you're gonna like instantly hop in and like deny everything and say like, no, I kind of feel like it is true. So
yeah.
It's kind of like I'm happy as like a Celtics fan, but it's sad like in a sense of like what is going on, like what is Jeannie doing, like. I hate to like point it on someone, but it's
nope.
going to end up coming down to Jeannie, and is like, does she know what she's doing? She had way too many cooks in the kitchen. Like you hear about the Ramesses and like all these
yeah.
like different people that have to put their input into it. It's just like, what is this like care of like an organization that you're running? And like you said, it's the number one basketball team in the world. So it's, you've got to have like a large staff and all that. And just from like, the ground up, it's just like just terrible and all that. So it's just, I don't know, it's shocking, but you know, it made me kind of like feel like it was more true how quickly you saw Magic on ESPN and all that, and then
yeah,
you know, everything,
and
Stephen A
that,
having a
well, just to add on real quickly, like his little spiel about how he was never brought into the HR department, like he's like, I never even fucking stepped foot in the HR department. Like the Baxter Holmes like brought up in the Low Post interview, he's like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure he didn't, because everybody was so intimidated by him that no one was going to ever bring any of this shit up, that like for fear of being ostracized or, you know, fired or, you know, whatever. So like the fact that like, well, yeah, no complaint was ever officially levied against you doesn't mean you weren't conducting business in, you know, ways that would be considered improper.
Yeah. So it just, I don't know. That's the sad part. But the other part with Pelinka, I mean, at this point you have to hold on to him for right now, just cause like, it's already just a shit storm. You can't even make it look even more terrible, because you're not going to convince anyone. I mean, one person that I thought could have taken the job was David Griffin. He obviously was like, no, I'd rather do things in New Orleans and stay away from you guys.
I don't blame him.
Yeah, so it's going to be, you know, I mean, your one hope is, I don't even know at this point. I don't think anyone wants to take the job. So do you just keep Pelinka? Are you? I know they're waiting until the finals are over, but what are you so? I mean, well, wait, who'd you say? Not Bob Myers. Who are you talking about?
Danny Ferry. Like, if you couldn't get any of the big names, I think you could get Danny Ferry, and he proved to be competent when he was in Atlanta. He had the fucking, he got fired because of like some random like racist shit that he said. I can't even remember the exact context of it, but saying something about like, we need to get more white people in the stands or some shit like
yeah.
that. Something, he said something really fucking stupid. And it ended up getting him fired. But I mean, he's several years removed from that now. I think he would be a possibility, who would be, you know, somebody who you could plug in, who would actually be competent. Brian Colangelo, obviously he had the whole burner account scandal in Philadelphia. He's a year removed from that. I wouldn't mind him either. I mean, it's just like, but that's the level of things. Like, these are the guys, like there is nobody on the open market that I would not rather have than Rob Pelinka. Like, Jeannie needs to get in there, wipe the whole fucking slate clean, and just hire someone and tell them, build your staff, do your thing, you're in charge, go. Like, you don't have, like, run shit by me, but you don't have, like, seven different people that you got to run shit by. Like, that's not how you manage an organization. And, you know, if they do want to get somebody like Bob Myers or, you know, Masai or, you know, any sort of big name, then that's how they're going to have to conduct, you know, their business. And, like, to me, that's how you should conduct it, regardless of whether you get a big name. Even if you get someone who's just, like, competent. Like, fuck, give me Ernie Grunfeld over motherfucking Rob Pelinka. Like, Jesus. Like, this is just such a shit show. Now, all of this being said, I don't expect anything to happen. If it was going to happen, you would think it would have already happened. Like, I mean, you would have already, like, made the decision, all right, we're going to go in a different direction. Maybe you don't know exactly what that direction is yet, but you would have already made the decision to go in a different direction. So I don't expect any of this to change. I mean, I would hope that Jeannie Buss is smart. I mean, I don't think she's stupid. I would hope she's smart enough to see the writing on the wall, but I don't know. I don't think you stand pat now. But I think that's what she will do.
No, I mean, she will do it. And I mean, it's just at this point where it's just like, they're so invested. The Buss family is so invested in it. She can't sell it because there's nothing else that their family does. And it's just something to keeping your line and keep it going. But it's just like at right now, it's just like all of them have just been terrible for like their dad's legacy right now. I mean, it's very simple. I mean, just get the right people to run it and stay out. I mean, don't have so many people going into it. I mean, if you're trying to get like a Bob Myers right now, I mean, it's going to be hard to sell him on what you have right now unless you sell him on the fact that I've been waiting to clear shop, but besides Vogel that we just hired, it's just you and you choose everything. Just start from top down. What do you want to do? You can have magic stuff. Yeah. You can do whatever. So, I mean, it's just, but you have to wait. It's just, but look, right now, it's to the point where it's just that whole, like, she's competing with some of the terrible owners in basketball. And it's just like, it's not because she does terrible things. It's because she doesn't know how to run things correctly. And that's surprising. Like, the other ones are just terrible. And it's just like, you know, they torment their fans and all that. But this one is like, it's easy. You have the Lakers. That's all you have to do. Just get the right people and stop having 13 people. I mean, I read that one article where I can't think of her name, but it's like one of her best friends is also like a big decision maker for her. And,
Linda Rambis, she and Linda Rambis are really close. And like Linda Rambis has a lot of sway in the decision making, and she's really tight with Rob Pelinka. So it's like, it's this fucking web of nepotism that has just fucking entrenched this organization. And God, it's fucking sad, man. Like, I mean, none of us are Lakers fans on this pod. Obviously not you, not me, definitely not Joel. I think he may hate the Lakers more than you do, as crazy as that is to imagine. But like, and Juwan neither, but like, I don't know. None of us want to see an organization this fucked up, you know, it's terrible. Like, and you know, we all know that, you know, when the NBA is at its best, it's when, you know, your, LA, your Lakers, your Celtics, your Knicks, your Bulls, like they're all kind of, you know, these top teams, you want your big markets to do well. And it's just not the case right now. I mean, the Celtics are the only one out of the, like, either historical or super big market teams that are even close to relevant. I mean, I guess you could say the Warriors, but, like they're – San Fran's – you know, the Bay Area is, like, a reasonable – it's of the same ilk size market as Boston, but it doesn't have the history. And you know, so they're obviously a draw, but not on the same level as those other teams if they were successful. So yeah, I mean, it sucks. Like I know Bill Simmons threw this out and some other people have been talking about it. I've seen some articles pop up about it. Like, what would you, if they strike out in free agency, do you think there's a possibility that they trade for fucking Chris Paul? Because, I mean, I think that's crazy, but, I mean, I can't put it past fucking Pelinka, you know?
If Pelinka's still doing it, even, I mean, unless you get the right person that's in there, I mean, Pelinka's in it and you struck, like, if I'm a free agent right now, what is selling me on going to your organization? I've heard a lot of agents already didn't like Pelinka, so that wasn't kind of working in his favor when he was an agent. I kind of heard he'd already built that reputation. And now not a lot of GMs like you, so it's just easy, like, a word around and, like, and just, like, everything that's written on the wall right now, like, I mean, you're seeing it. I mean, they're definitely, like, looking at it. So, like, what's selling me to go to play with you and LeBron, and I don't know what you're going to do and if anyone's going to even trade with you and all that. So, like, I mean, I don't think they're going to strike out because it's still the Lakers and they can turn around at any point, but I don't know what top free agent's trying to go there now. Are you going to settle with the tier three kind of level guys and sign them the big money? Or
I could totally see them giving Vucevic a max contract. You know,
but like, why? Like, I understand you struck out, but there's no reason. I mean, he's a good player, and like, don't get me wrong, he'd be pretty good on the Lakers, but not the max contract. I mean, so I could definitely see him doing
we saw
like
what
that,
he did
but...
in the playoffs, dude. He got completely taken out of the fucking whole series. He didn't do shit against Toronto.
So it's just like, what would you do? And then the end, I mean, it'd be ironic if Chris Paul actually got traded to the Lakers this time and it didn't get, you know, vetoed. So that would be funny, but
we finally got Chris Paul just like, you know, 10 years too late or whatever.
Yeah, I know he's LeBron's boy and everything, but I hope LeBron's like smart enough to be like, you know, he's my boy, but I don't want to play with him. Like, you know, he's my boy, but I just don't want to play with him because, I mean, no offense to Paul, he's a good player, but he's not a playoff leading point guard. He always has these issues with his players and all that. I mean, you just go back to Lob City and all that, and it's just running back right now what you've seen in Hardy. So it's not like he's the best player sometimes. And I think for LeBron, for their friendship, I think, like, I wouldn't want to play with them. But I wouldn't hold it past if Pelinka's still there and he's able to do, like, make his own moves and all that, and she doesn't fire Pelinka right after the finals, then I could definitely, if they do strike out, Chris Paul. I mean, what other team would really honestly trade for Paul? Like, right now, I mean, I don't see him holding a high market.
The only other team that I could come up with, like, that made any amount of sense to me was the Heat. Just because, like they could ship out some of those two-year deals that aren't super nice. You know, like your James Johnson, your Ryan Anderson. He's expiring this year. I can't remember who
Olenek,
they were.
Olenek, I think, is a 2-year still. Kelly Olenek.
Yeah, Olenek.
Yeah,
and then they have one other one, too. Deion Waiters. So, like, if I could get out of, like, those shitty players that have 2 years left, like, I'm not sending you, like, a slew of expirings for him. I'm not doing that. But, like, if you're willing to take, you know, a package centered around, like, two of those three guys and then figure out what salary makes the money work and all that. I might consider that if I'm the Heat. Like, especially if I'm the Heat and I could make that move and then, you know, could potentially, you know, go to the Lakers and say, hey, you missed all your big free agents. Like, we'll put together, you know, a reasonably decent trade offer for LeBron James involving, like, Josh Richardson, who's a really good young player on a team-friendly deal, Justice Winslow, our first, our number 15 pick, number 13 pick, and then, you know, an expiring to make the money work or whatever. And we can throw in Bam Adebayo. So, like, you know, I feel like if I could get off some 2-year deals and get Chris Paul and then put myself in position to, you know, put a trade package together for LeBron, because I feel like that if LeBron were to be traded, I feel like that is, like, the one place that, like, he could be traded where he would not be, like, p- pissed off about it. Like, he'd be like, all right, cool. Well, I'm going back to Miami. Fucking loved it in Miami. Going to play with my buddy. We're probably not going to win a championship, but maybe we can get D Wade back for a year. Maybe we'll bring Melo in, Banana Boat, like Miami, whatever, you know, something like that. But I mean, it's still to me a stretch. Like, I still feel like Miami would be like, and do we really want to do that? You know, but if you're trading off 2 years, you know, for three, you know, 2 years of contracts for 3 years of Chris Paul, you know, you're only giving up that one extra year of salary. So it wouldn't be the end of the world. But, you know, and I actually do feel like if I'm the Lakers, if I could get, you know, a package centered around a late lottery pick, Bam Adebayo, Josh Richardson, and, you know, Justice Winslow, like, I'd do that in a fucking heartbeat. Like, if I knew it wasn't going to piss LeBron off, like, if I knew there wasn't going to be, like, all these reports of him coming out saying, you know, he was just stunned by the trade and fuck the Lakers and all that, like, you know, I would want to run it by him and be like, hey, like, we got this offer, you know, you can go back to Miami and, you know, get out of here and whatever. I don't know, maybe he would be like, yeah, you know what, that doesn't sound that bad. Like, that actually, I mean, at least I can go back to a place I'm familiar with that, you know, I love being in, you know, go compete for, you know, in the playoffs in the East for the, you know, final few years of my career. I don't know, whatever. But again, super, super, super fucking long shot. But yeah, I don't see very many players taking that contract. Well, let's transition over to that though. So we had a report come out that the Rockets are making everyone on their roster available after losing to the Warriors in the semifinals. I think there was some kind of like parentheses saying like James Harden very unlikely, but it did not specify that he was off the table. Do you think this is the right approach by the Rockets? Obviously, they have the ongoing issue with Mike D'Antoni. So, you know, he's still on board, but they, like, pretty much fired his whole staff. And he's on a one-year deal. They haven't been able to reach any sort of agreement for an extension. And I read, like, an article, like, an hour ago saying that, like, talks have broken down as far as any word on that extension. So they got that going on. They're putting all their players out, like announcing to everybody that all their players are out on the market. This doesn't seem like a good look either. They also, you know, famously kind of tiptoed around the luxury tax at the trade deadline and moved all these various pieces to get essentially, you know, to get out of the luxury tax. Not a great look. I understand why they did it, and I don't fault them for doing that because the players that they wanted to get that would have been worth it to go over the luxury tax, they just couldn't work out any sort of deals for, i.e. your Jimmy Butler. So I get that aspect of it, but still, like, you still could have put together a better team had you decided we really, really don't care about the luxury tax. Like, it would have been really nice, probably, to have had James Ennis, you know, give you 20 minutes a game in the playoffs, as opposed to, you know, anybody else that was getting 20 minutes a game. Gerald Green, for example. Because Ennis actually proved to be pretty important for the Sixers in their run. But, yeah, what's your take on this? Who do you think is the most likely to be traded out of any of these guys? And just your general thoughts on the strategy coming out of Houston.
No, I mean, I don't mind that he listed, like, if Morey is the one that, like, told – Woj is the one that tweeted out, and obviously if he talked to, you know – And they, like, I don't mind that everyone's on the tables. I mean, obviously he's going to go to Harden and be like, yo, check it. Like, real talk, you're not But I got to, like, because you can't make everyone mad that it's just, like, everyone's on the table, but James Harden's off limits. Because now it's just kind of like looking like, yeah, whoa. And it, like, say, for instance, what if they don't run it, do a trade, and they just run it back, like, and make things ten times worse for that. So at least you kind of just put it out there, like, none of y'all are safe. So just know that. So, I mean, in all honesty, I think that they need to wait, too, until after, you know, the whole free agency period's over. Because, I mean, even though you just lost to a Durant-less Warriors, I mean, I'd try to just run it back and do minor things, not major things. But, if you know, but I, in all honesty, I see that happening over someone getting traded just because, like you're saying, like, that Chris Paul contract is so bad. Like, in 4 years or like three, do you want to be paying $42 million? Like, that is what you're going to be paying for Chris Paul? That is just, like, a scary, like, no. And, like, I know, like, how you listed, like, you know, your teams that think that you do. The only team that I feel like would kind of do it, and it makes sense just a little bit, is if Phoenix Suns strike out, because I think they are going to strike out. I don't see anyone running to the Suns, but I could see the Suns doing it and taking on a contract. I think if Rozier has any other, like, city competing and it's between, like, you know, Phoenix and all that, I don't think he's going to choose Phoenix
Chicago
over it.
Or
I mean, they could. Yeah,
pick Chicago and Orlando over Phoenix.
All they could do is, like, max him, and I could see another team being like, all right, we'll max you too. And then you have the Celtics that can always match it too. So
God.
I don't see Rozier. So
that contract is fucking scary.
The max contract for Terry Rozier. God.
Yeah, if someone maxed him, oh man, yeah. But hey, you know, you never know. I mean, I've seen crazy things happen, but Paul's just going to be hard, but I could see Suns doing it. I mean, you wouldn't even have to take that. I mean, what? You could maybe take, I mean, you're not going to get T.J. Warren, but that's, like, your best. I mean, if you could somehow trick them into thinking Chris Paul's worth that and do something like that, I mean, you just, at this point, you just want to get off this contract. If you're really, if, because it is, I mean, there's three different, like, people running it right now, and they all have, like, it's the owner and D'Antoni on one side, and it's Morey on the other side. So it's just like, what's going on and all that. So
should
you know, have
taken
that
job in Philly.
Yeah. But you know, so it's kind of like, you know, what are they doing? But I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say because you can't, like, Capella, your two trade assets, because Gordon's on expiring and it's just no point to just trade that. I mean, he's keep him on the team. If you're going to keep anyone, it should be Harden and him, because Harden's your long run building around, and Gordon's on expiring, so why just get rid of that? He actually can do something for you.
Unless
and PJ
it's
Tucker,
the right piece.
Okay, but I don't,
like,
see
for
anything
instance,
coming.
Here's one that I've floated that I could see. If you could somehow trade Gordon and, like, two future firsts for Covington, I would probably do that trade. Heavily protected, like, you know, don't get, obviously Morey would make sure that they were. But, like, I know there was that report earlier today from Bleacher Report saying that, you know, the Timberwolves are interested in trading Wiggins to the Hawks. I seriously doubt that happens. I don't think anyone is taking the Wiggins contract. I don't see it happening. So you need to get off some money. So, you know, if you're able to get Gordon, who's a serviceable shooting guard, and hopefully you're hoping, Josh Okogie can make that next step by next year, he comes off your books, you're saving a little bit of money that way. I don't, and you get to future first, like that could be a deal that I could see happening. Cause I think Covington, his defense would be just, like, even better than Ariza's was. And the fact that he's a 40% three-point shooter would, like, kind of fit what you need. He's not going to be the shot creator that Eric Gordon can be, but when you have James Harden and even Chris Paul to a
certain degree. I think that deal could make a lot of sense, but I can't think of anybody else that I would try to shop Gordon for. Like, that would be the only one.
Yeah, I mean, that's a dream scenario, I think, but that wouldn't happen. Them to get Covington, even though you would have to give up two, like you said, very protective first-rounders, and that's the more enticing thing in getting off some money. But honestly, I mean, the three people I'm stuck, I'm definitely, if I'm going to blow things up and I'm not going to run it back after I see everything that goes down in free agency and where people land in, like, kind of see, like, the land right now and everything, I'm like, P.J. Tucker, Gordon, and Harden, that's my three, and now I got to build around that. I mean, Capella's contract's pretty – it's not, like, a lot of money. It's just – it's 20 mil per year, if I'm not, like, mistaken. Pretty sure it's like
no,
that.
It's a little less than that. It's, like – I think it was, like, 15 this year. I think it was up to, like, 16.5 or 17 next year. So it's in that ball. I think it was 5 years, 110. If I'm remembering correctly, but it's an escalating contract, so it'll get bigger. It'll get a lot closer to 20 and surpass 20 by the end of it.
So it's just like who's in his market right now? I mean, what are you going to fetch for that? It's going to be hard.
Yeah,
for them
Justin
to really
Verrier
do
can
things.
Shut his fucking mouth about my Hawks trading for him. Like, fuck you, Verrier.
I honestly, before he, I had heard that and all that, I honestly thought that your team could be one of them. You or Dallas were two teams that I thought could take on the contract because, you know, you're not there yet, but this, you know, you could be like, it's not like it's putting you over the mark, but it's helping you out in some areas where you're kind of weak. And Dallas, too, I don't see anyone going to them anyways and, you know. And that it, even though these centers are going extinct nowadays, it's not bad to have a type of center like that. So, and like, what else are you spending your money on? I mean, there's no point to do the
Malcolm Brogdon.
You could do the Brogdon, but like, say you don't get him because Milwaukee can always match it no matter what. So
match.
Say like you're not getting a restricted free agent. You're gonna go get an un. Like, you don't want to do like the terrible. Beyond, like,
well,
you know,
sure,
all those deals that happened back in 2012.
I agree, but my counter to that would be that if we don't get the guys that we target, say we don't get any of the guys that we like, then I feel like you try to find, like, an Alex Lynn type player that you can bring in for cheap for a couple years and see how they work out. Alex Lynn at $5 million is fucking great. I'd rather have Alex Lynn out on the floor for most of the game than Clint Capella because Alex Lynn can shoot. He can shoot from three. He can rebound. He's not nearly the defender that Capella is. So, I mean, that's obviously true. But he has a big body who can work in the paint. You find, like, guys like that who, you know, you can maybe only one, maybe two, guys that, you know, essentially the market passed them by and now they're trying to find a place to land. And then you trade for expirings. You say, hey, Portland, like, give us a first round pick and we'll take Evan Turner off your hands, you know, so you can get under the luxury tax. But maybe, you know, if the market is really saturated and a lot of teams are doing that, we could even say, cause we have the cap space, we even say we'll take him and, say Myers Leonard or Mo Harkless off your hands, like, because all three of those are expiring. But we, you know, we want some assets in return. I think that would be the better way to go, especially with Verrier's idea to give up Torian Prince. Like, I if I'm giving up Torian Prince, I want to gain some kind of future asset, not necessarily, you know, an overpaid big man who. I don't think fits in today's NBA at the price that he's being paid. So, like, if you're telling me all I had to give up was Miles Plumlee's expiring, okay, sure, why not? But, like, I'm not giving up Prince and that. And if you're Houston, why would you Would you really want to give up Capella for Miles Plumlee's expiring contract? Hell no. So that's where I feel like there's an impasse there.
No, yeah, I mean, you have to get something out of if you're trading Capella, you got to get something out of him. I mean, here's
right.
my only, I understand it completely where you're coming from. Here's, my kind of, say, for instance, the East doesn't get that much stronger, per se. A lot of, Kawhi actually ends up going to the Clippers, and Kevin Durant ends up, staying out West and going somewhere and all that, and the East is kind of just still not as strong, and Atlanta, has a good, decent draft. They do what you don't want them to do and take a center and waste one of their top picks on one of these centers and all that. So, you're
if
obviously
they do that, I hope they go
position.
With somebody better than Jackson Hayes. That's all
No, but
say.
You get your wing, you get a couple of wings and all that, and you're helping with that side of the defensive, and then, and you still have your center position. Now at this point, and Capella could come in and help you guys, you would still say no to that, knowing that, hey, there actually could be a chance that we could be the Sacramento Kings of this year. And actually, with the East not being the West, we could sneak into 8th or 7th and young and in his second year
and
all that.
And get swept in the first round.
Hey, that doesn't matter. Trey Young in his second year already learns what the playoffs is like, and Collins needs to learn what the playoffs is like. Better to know what that's instead of 5 years from now, not knowing the pressure and what it's like to get your heart ripped out.
With lottery reform, I'd rather just finish 10th, 9th or 10th and get a shot at winning one of the top four picks. If you're telling me I get a 6% shot at number one versus 100% chance of being knocked out in the first round, I'll give me the 6% chance at getting number one.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just the upcoming drafts, there's no really transcendent player coming out for a while. I mean, it's going to be 3 years till the next one. So at this point, I mean, might as well see what my young guys do. If the East, if the East is weak, I wouldn't be kind of shocked or mad if I was a Hawks fan and that trade ended up kind of shaking out. I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but
I just don't think
if I want to.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, just for I have a young coach, I have a young, very young team, I know who I'm building around, and those two, and it's better to get them out there and start learning, and especially for my coach to start learning on his own what the playoffs are like, because the regular season is nothing what the playoffs are. The regular season really doesn't tell you anything about how well you're going to do. I mean, yeah, you can be Golden State and just be kicking everyone's ass and sometimes it's fair, but it really comes down to anything can happen in the playoffs, and it's a way different coaching game set and all that. So, and everything. So might as well get out there and start figuring it out. Yeah, it's going to suck and swept and all that, but I mean, look at the Celtics, for instance. I mean, we got swept. I mean, and then, yeah, we didn't do good this year, but we still made the Eastern Conference Finals last year. I mean, you're going to get past it. I mean, everything you gotta stumble. I mean, your team used to do it with people that weren't young and all that. So, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed if I have a chance. I mean, yeah, there is the 6% chance, but right now there's no player that's coming in that's going to be overtaking Young or Collins. So there's no reason that I need to keep on being in the bottom in my mind if I'm the Hawks, and the East is where it's still at.
Yeah, I'm not saying I want to phrase this in a particular context. I'm not saying I would be opposed to making the playoffs, but what I'm saying is if I had to commit to give up Prince, commit to Capella's contract, and that is what made me make the playoffs and lose in the first round, so I'm committing that money to Capella long-term for the next 4 years, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of it. I like John Collins playing the five. I think John Collins in most instances can play the five just fine. In the instances when you're going up against a Joel Embiid or something like that, you throw Alex Len out there and he's a bigger body.
can still stretch the floor. Like, I'm fine with that. I don't feel like we need a center. Not to mention, like, I feel like Omari Spellman's going to come back this year, and he's going to play well. He's a big dude. He's not super tall. I think he's only, like, 6'9". But he's got a pretty impressive wingspan. I want to say it's 7'3", 7'4", or something like that. And, you know, he could be a guy, obviously, who could play center. You definitely don't want to give Plumlee a whole lot of minutes. That's a last resort. But we got enough bigs. I feel like rim runners are overrated. I get the fact that Capella is, like, really solid defensively at protecting the paint. And he would certainly help us get some extra wins. I just feel like that'd be a case of, like, cutting corners. Plus, what I was going to say earlier, Travis Schlink's MO is players who can dribble, pass, and shoot. Like, fucking Capella can't do any of those things. Like, really. So, you know, I don't feel like he fits the mold of the kind of players that that TS wants to go out and get. So I don't know. I just don't think it makes sense coming from the perspective of what the GM has said time and time again, what, you know, the decisions that he's made in the past, and, you know, how I see the organization moving forward. So, if he did it, I'd be a little pissed about it, but, I'd get over it. I got over the Luka trade, so, this would be, wouldn't be as devastating to me as that was. But nevertheless, I would still be, I'd still be like, really? Like, committing, like, fucking this much money to this fucking guy? Same thing with the Wiggins thing. Like, it's an unnecessary amount of money to like, give up any amount of asset. To give up any amount of asset for Capella as it pertains to Wiggins, it's just way too much fucking money. Like, I don't want to pay a guy $30 million a year to take 18 shots and shoot 40%, like, and shoot 67% from the line. Like, it's just 33% from three, I think, is what he shot last year. So same thing. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Hawks are going to be in, like, the realm of speculation because of their cap space, because they're a rebuilding team, because they have all of these various assets that they can move around. So I expect them to be in a lot of talks. I don't expect a lot of the things that are talked about to come to fruition. It's going to be the things that happen are going to be the things that aren't talked about, because that's kind of always the way the Hawks work. You don't usually hear a lot about what's going on with them until it happens. They're a very enclosed organization. Not a lot gets out. So, but we'll see. We'll see how it pans out. So to tie it all back in, we both don't think Paul's really going to be on – like, no one's going to really want Paul except for maybe the Lakers. And even then, I think we're both skeptical of that. I just to throw this out there, like, if I was the Lakers, I'd call up Maury and be like, you take LeBron for Harden straight up. Like, I feel like, along with this report that we got from the Lakers, a lot of this dysfunction is obviously tied to Pelinka and was tied to Magic. But there's a lot going on with LeBron and his camp and his dudes who get jobs and Rich Paul basically, going and talking to Adam Silver about how he doesn't like Luke Walton. There's a lot of drama that just the LeBron camp brings in general, not to mention, all of the shit that happened with the team at the end of the season after the Anthony Davis stuff. Harden's 4 years younger. I think he's 4.5 years younger. So he fits your timetable better. He arguably fits better with your current core, because if you have Lonzo, kind of being the distributor type
who can maybe stagger minutes with Harden. And then, you know, you got Ingram, Kuzma, and then whoever you figure out at center. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a better fit, in my opinion. I mean, Harden's a tough guy to fit, similar to LeBron. But the biggest thing would be the age factor for me, for the Lakers. It'd give you a bigger window. Also, maybe one of these free agents is more inclined to come play with James Harden than they would be LeBron James. I don't know if that's true or not. I feel like it's pretty evident that most of these guys don't want to come and play with LeBron, you know, even aside from the dysfunction of the organization. And I just feel like if you're the Rockets, and you're looking at your situation like, all right, we can't trade CP3. Nobody wants him without us giving up assets. Capella, we maybe can move, but, probably going to prove to be difficult. Like you said, we don't really want to trade Gordon or P.J. Tucker, especially Tucker. I mean, his like defense, like I had him second team all defense this year. He's fucking terrific for them this year. And he's affordable. He's like $10 million a year or less. That's obviously a luxury. But I think if you plug LeBron into that lineup instead of Harden, I think you're just hoping like, all right, well, you know, come playoff time, LeBron's better than Harden. At least history has bared that out. Now, we don't know what's going to happen with LeBron and his age. But, you know, our timeline pretty much goes by with where Chris Paul is, because in 3 years, let's say after the next two seasons, CP3 becomes expiring, then he becomes easier to move. So maybe you're looking at a situation where you can move him in 3 years. So after the next two seasons, but at that time, now Harden is going to be tailing off from his prime. So it's like, what can you really do with that timetable going forward? Like, I would just be like, we're so tied to Chris Paul now because he's an immovable contract. Like, well, fuck, let's just upgrade a player who fits in line with CP3's timetable. That's LeBron James. I don't know. I don't think it'll happen, but I don't think it's a bad trade for either side for the reasons I listed. What do you think?
No, it's not a bad trade at all. It's just it's one of those trades that won't happen in the end. It does work for both sides, like you're saying, and all that. But I feel like the Rockets already committed to this, and they're just going to have to run it back and just see what happens with Durant and everything. And just, hope, next year you just play the same thing and see if someone else knocks out Golden State without Kevin Durant and all that, and see like what the West was really like. So I just feel like Houston's going to stay pat. Now they might make some minor deals and all that and not do some things like they had to do this year where they sign some people and then do a bunch of cuts and try to get everyone that's on the open market once they get released from their team in the buyout market. So, but it's going to be tough for them. I just feel like they're too committed and a lot of cap and their three top players where it's impossible for them to really make moves that are going to, even if they were to make any of these trades, none of them are really going to make them jump over Golden State where they're at right now, even with the
You don't think
Kevin
a LeBron trade would make them?
I think
that wouldn't favor.
I mean, the LeBron change would, but I'm just saying that's the last one that would ever like happen. Is that
that's
would
fair.
Be some,
that's fair.
Palinka's not that smart to do a trade like that. How about that? He's not. He wouldn't pull it off for you. So it makes sense, and yes, they would be better. But other than that, Harden still being on the team, you trade CP3. It's nothing's going to make you so run it back. You've already committed. Just keep on, it sucks. But, hey, they did this to themselves with knowing who they're building around. I mean, so they got to hope and pray that some other team takes out who, you know, their nemesis in Gold State, and they don't have to worry about them in the Western Conference Final, and that's how they make it. So, or they actually end up just beating them somehow with, you know, next year just without a Kevin Durant list team the whole time. So, we'll see. It's interesting, though.
Yeah, like Curry's got those ankles, man. You never know. Hey, knock on wood, too, because we obviously wouldn't want that to happen. But, I mean, it seems like that's the kind of thing that it would take. But, yeah, I kind of expect them to keep most of these guys, too. I could see – I don't think Paul or Harden are going anywhere. Capella's probably the most likely to – or P.J. Tucker – I think Capella or Gordon are the most likely to be moved in some kind of form or fashion because, you know, Capella does still have, you know, value even though he's overpaid. And Gordon is an expiring at $14 million. Like, certainly that holds value. But, yeah, it's going to be tough. Hopefully they at least use, like, the, you know, mid-level exception this year, which they did not do last year, to try and, like, you know, get some wing help, you know, like a, I don't know, a Wayne Ellington. Like, if you could pay him part of the mid-level exception and still manage to stay under the tax, like, he'd be a guy who'd be, you know, a nice fit. Maybe you could plug him into the starting lineup and bring Eric Gordon off the bench again or something like that. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. All right, we'll make this one quick. I'm going to take a page out of Rachel Nichols' book here. Anthony Davis met with David Griffin a couple days ago in Los Angeles to discuss, I would imagine, Griffin's future, Davis's future, his future with or without the team, you know, all of these kinds of things. So something, nothing, or everything.
No, I mean, I think that it had to be done. I think Griffin's a really smart coach, and he understands what he's doing. I mean, not coach, GM. And he actually understands how to run an organization, all that. So I feel like, you know, he's got to meet this star player that obviously is a very transcendent player and see if there's anything that he can do to smooth it over. I mean, it might not work, but even if he can just get confirmation and Anthony Davis is just like, hey, man, I'm sorry. Like, yeah, we could have Zion, and I see what you're saying and all that, but it's just at this point it's too far gone. I just like Griffin just being like, hey, man, just let it be on my terms that, you know, I'm going to trade you and everything. Like, don't keep on leaking it out there and do what you did this year where, you know, you're saying all these things like, let me do the trade. I'll make the right one. We'll make it work for all sides. Like, let's just do like how normal trades are behind doors. So I think, you
right.
know, it was smart for him to do it right now because, you know, we're coming up on the end of the year. Might as well not have like any kind of conversation with them before, you know, I mean, they moved up the free agency and the draft too. So you kind of want to be like, you know, we're, even though everyone knows they're taking Zion, just like, here's my whole plan and all that. So I think it was smart by Griffin. Might as well see what you can do, if there's any way you can turn this around, run it back. I don't think if they do convince them, I don't think it's going to be one of those ones where people have been like, you can just trade them at the trade deadline. I just think Griffin already understands that if I'm going to trade you, I got to trade you right now when I can get the most out of you. Not
holy hell yeah.
Right at trade deadline where I'm not getting everything. So I just think it was just one of those kind of things. So, you know, nothing wrong with meeting your star player that wore That's All Folks show to the last basketball game ever. But, hey, that wasn't your team that you're running.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's smart on Griffin's part. I don't expect much to have come out of it as far as anything to change Davis's mind or to change the situation that Griffin finds himself in. But I mean, like you said, I think, you know, you sit down, you have a discussion with him. If he makes it clear that he still wants to be traded, and there's nothing you know, that you could do as a GM to make him happy and make him want to stay, you know, short of, you know, maybe, you know, if he says, you know, hey, like, if you take that number one pick and flip it into somebody who's actually, like, really good right now, like if he said trade the number one pick for Bradley Beal and number nine, I think Washington has, and see what you can flip for number nine and to get, you know, other things. Like, at that point, if I'm David Griffin, I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Like, I appreciate that would get you to, like, stay for a year. If that's not getting you to actually sign the extension, like, at the moment that I make that trade, I'm not doing it. And I would still have to even think about it, you know, if you did agree to sign the extension. But I don't expect any of that kind of stuff to happen. I mean, he wants out of there. That's kind of become clear at this point. And, you know, but it's good to sit down and meet with your guy. I think one thing of interest here is if they do trade him to the Lakers, or you know, whoever they trade him to, and just in the future in general, they're probably going to end up with more clutch sports clients on their team. David Griffin is very smart about this. He recognizes that you don't want to be at odds with an entire agency. That's how you end up not being able to get Paul George, you know, because obviously that was a factor in you know, Paul George's agent not wanting to send him to Los Angeles. Now, obviously, Paul George is still the person who made that decision, but I have no doubt in my mind that given the track record with the Lakers and that and his agent, that played some amount of a factor. So I think it's smart on his part not only to kind of see where you're at with Davis, but to make sure that you are, you know, crossing all the T's, dotting all the I's as far as how to go about making, like, leaving this relationship without a sour taste in the mouth of Rich Paul and Clutch Sports, particularly if you, say, end up trading him to the Lakers and you get number four in return, and then you draft a player who was just signed by Clutch Sports, i.e. a Darius Garland or a Cam Reddish. So I think it makes a lot of sense to me to do this. I don't make much of it, but I think it's just David Griffin being smart and being calculating, and just it definitely makes you question why the Lakers didn't just fire everybody immediately and be like, please come here, David Griffin. Like, we really want you. But of course they did not. But anyway, we can move on from that one. I want to get just your brief thoughts before I get your take on the finals. Post-combine, I had a couple players that stood out to me at the combine. The first one being Nicholas Claxton. He's moved up my board and a lot of people's boards based off his performance at the combine. Big man out of University of Georgia, go Dawgs, who is a, you know, he's a big, he's like 6'10", 6'11", but, you know, he was their primary instigator on offense, facilitator, I guess I should say. And, you know, he obviously has the ability to handle the ball. Very good passer. Especially for a guy of his size. He's solid in the paint, good rebounder. His shooting, you know, leaves something to be desired. But this kid is like the kind of athlete that you really would be looking at as far as the center position of the future. His ability to switch and guard the perimeter is outstanding. And that was probably the biggest takeaway that I had from him at the combine. I've moved him up into the mid-20s as far as my board. I think he may still – I'm crossing my fingers that he drops to 35. But, like, I wouldn't be surprised if, say, your Celtics, if they're looking at, you know, trying to take another big man. I don't know if they are because they did just take Robert Williams. But if that is something that they want to address – I mean, I would totally be comfortable with taking Nick Claxton at 22. I think if he can figure out his shot, he's going to be great. I think he's going to be solid regardless. Do you have the same opinion that I have on him? And, like, is there a guy who kind of stood out to you from the workouts or just a guy in general who you feel like has gotten a boost lately?
No, I mean, no, Claxton definitely showed. I mean, he's like you say, 6'10". If you watched Georgia last year, he definitely ran the point for them for some reason, just because they didn't really have a point guard and he got injured. And
yeah,
actually did pretty well at it. And like you say, in the way that NBA is going these nowadays, it seems like more than these types of centers that can do more than just post down low and all that and get your occasional, like, block and all that. So, I mean, I think it's big. I still don't have him as high as you. I can see him possibly some teams. This year, I feel like the draft's going to be about teams that make, like, instead of in the later and, like, early, like, second round, instead of, like, a person that can help them, they're going to take these guys that could be, like, you know, that could be really good. Like, a Naz Reid, too, is another one that I've always been fascinated. He didn't have that great of a combine, but, I mean – I've watched him last year at LSU. The kid knows how to shoot a three-pointer. I mean, 6'10".
That's true.
Very hard to come by. I mean, like, he definitely knows how to, like, set the floor. Like, I can see people. Another one that I'm going to maybe butcher his name. He's from FSU. Give me a second. I need to look at it before I say it.
I'm going to leave this one up to you, man.
Mifundo Kabel. Bengele. Now he's another one that I could see possibly.
I think it's Cabangele, but yeah.
Cabangele, yeah. But all yeah. these, like, they're bigs that just, like, they're very interesting, and they're kind of like are fitting, like, you know, your more mold of, like, where you want, and, like, they're just, like, very tall and lengthy. Like, I could see, like, you know, teams taking more risks instead of getting that, like, guy that could possibly help out right now, like, you're a winning team, you already make the playoffs, or maybe just taking a guy that could be, like, a little project and jumping on him early. Like you're saying, you would love for Claxton to fall into the second round where you guys are at, but I could definitely see him getting taken. I mean, if the Celtics were to do it, I mean, it'd be interesting. I definitely think at the time of 22, there's a lot more people on the board. But another one that I talked about last week, and I knew I blew his and blew your mind when I had him high, just because, I mean, I don't think he's going to go where I had him to Minnesota. But Luka Samanich, another guy
yeah.
I could definitely see taking in, like, you know, right out of the lottery, early 20s. The guy that knows how to shoot well. I mean, yeah, he's
yeah,
from
he
Croatia
looks
and all
great.
That. He's still – yeah, it still looked really good. Definitely those first the whole first game that they had, he's definitely the one that just dominated that whole time. Like, he definitely was like,
mm-hmm.
I'm the best one right here. So he's a very interesting one and all that. But what really got me was it's not the guys, like, you know, I always, like, it's hard to judge, too, in these little quick scrimmages and all that, because talent might not be, you might be stuck with them. Some people that are not fully, and you're not having the top guys because a lot of them already know what they're doing, so they're only doing measurements. So the measurements are a big one out of me. I mean, big one that I was looking at is what was Culver's size? How tall is he really? I know that was a big one where people had
yeah.
him listed from like 6'8 and all that, and now it's like he's a true 6'6, which I always thought he was. I don't like hold it down on him, but it's like, you know, you get to see his measurements. Brandon Clark with his, you know, smaller wing size, like, would be – these players that you kind of understood, like, you know, there's going to be these limitations, but they're still really good players. But I like the ones that get the promises that I didn't think that they would skip out on the scrimmages, and that's Matisse Thybulle out of Washington.
Yeah.
very interested in him. Definitely, you know, I've always – he's not one of those guys
that
where, you know, he's got a very –
Celtics written the fuck all over him, bro.
Hey, rumor is that
he's
he could
Marcus
have been
Smart,
that,
right,
that's their rumor is that he supposedly got the promise from them. So I'm not saying anything. I mean, I like it all the way. He's a 3-and-D kind of guy. I just don't think I could see another team jumping on it, but it's just it's interesting. Like, guys like that are getting promises right now. Like, and, you know, he could do it. I mean, his offensive game still has a lot of work to do to it, but he shot, you know, well from the 3-point line, you know, his whole college career, and very good defensive player. And where you're at right now is that if you don't have one really good niche and you're not super athletic and there's possibly that, I mean, might as well be a 3-and-D kind of a guy. I mean, that's, you know, you see more of them actually being better for teams for championships and all that. And he definitely fits that mold right now, like coming out and definitely could be your 3-and-D kind of guy. So those are the ones that really, I mean, Garland, I didn't think he would do the whole workouts. I don't think, you know, he'd do maybe do like some of the drills to let people see how his knee is and all that, but just to only do the measurements was very surprising to me. I mean, obviously he's got a very like, so those ones are the ones that interest me is like, you've already got this promise though. There's something, you know, that, I mean, we all see it, but those are the ones that are definitely like, you know, because Thibault's already obviously cemented himself as a first round pick. I mean, it took me until the end of the year to really have him in the first round. I mean, that's one that obviously if you got this promise, you're not getting a promise like, hey, man, I'm going to take you in the second round. It's like, yeah, man, okay, I'll skip out. No, you want to improve your stock as much, but you already got your promise that you're in the first round. I mean, you could be like last year, like Erdogan obviously got the promise. I mean, he was hurt, but he obviously knew that Atlanta was going to take him because, I mean, it's not like Atlanta was like, at all costs, we'll get you. So it's just like, it's those like ones that are just like, the more surprising that they didn't have to do anything to raise their stock to be like a Nick Claxton to get themselves out. That, you know, the body of work, it's like they don't have the high ceilings and they do, but they're just like they could do really well and they're just kind of what you want. And if you can get them in like the later like 18 to 24, there's nothing wrong with taking a swing on a guy like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple other people who stood out to me, Grant Williams, scored very well on like the basketball IQ test that they do there. So that'll be interesting. He's got a lot of movement. Like there are people who have him as low as like an early second rounder. There are people who have him in the late lottery. I've seen a lot of variation on him. I have him, as like a right around number 20. I'm not sure exactly where as of right now. I don't have my list in front of me, but somewhere in that ballpark. But I think he's really interesting. I think another player who kind of fits the same mold as him, PJ Washington, your dude. I think his general stock is higher. Probably because of his size and his more apt 3-point shooting. I think Williams I think he's a smarter player, but he doesn't seem to have the intangibles that Washington brings. I'll be really interested to see like which one of those guys goes first. Like I said, PJ Washington generally considered the better prospect across most boards. But I've seen some people who have Williams ranked considerably above him. So I think that'll be an interesting thing to follow. I also like just a few guys who I think, maybe if not should consider going back to college, like, should be fully aware that they may be looking at two-way contracts at best, and, you know, potentially even going undrafted and having to try to, you know, sign from there. I just had it. What's his name? Charles Bassey, out of Western Kentucky. That dude's stock was super high. He was first rounder at at least on one of my mocks. He's just continually fell throughout the year for me. He shoots reasonably well from three, but on a very low attempt margin. He looks lost trying to defensive positioning and things like that. Which, I mean, to some degree you can teach, but like he looks really lost when he's on a basketball court on the defensive end. You don't have to have like the most elite defensive center, but defense is really probably most important at the center position. And the fact that he just doesn't seem like he at all knows what he's doing, and he doesn't bring you that sort of elite scoring upside that say a dude like DeAndre Ayton brings you. It's hard to see the value in that. I still think someone's going to take him in like the mid second round. But I wouldn't I would not want my Hawks to take him at 41 or 44. I just think there's going to be better players available there. Isaiah Roby, he's another guy who I think his stock has risen some. He's not the most physical guy, and that's the biggest knock on him, because he's really an interior player who plays with finesse. And he doesn't have the physicality that you would want. But again, strength and conditioning, NBA, just like I brought up earlier with the Lakers and Amari Spellman, you can get a guy to put on some muscle mass once you get him in. I mean, we have so many examples of that. So I think he'll end up being a mid-second rounder. I like him. I would be totally fine if the Hawks took him at 44. There was one other guy. Oh, Daquan Jeffries. He's a guy that 6'5", super athletic. I think that he – I have no idea where he's going to go. See, I think he could be as high as like a late first rounder, or he could go undrafted. I don't think he's going to go undrafted. I expect him to be somewhere in like the late 30s, early 40s. He's just a guy that I would definitely take a very long look at. I just feel like he's a guy who he just fits what you want in today's style of NBA player. He's got, several weaknesses, but I do think he's the kind of guy that I would roll the dice on, especially in that, picks, 40 through 50 type range. And one more guy that I think really raised his stock at the combine, Terrence Mann. This kid is just all motor, all effort, can't shoot to save his fucking life. He gives you everything else. He's a big body on the wing. He looks like he's going to be excellent defensively. Kind of reminds me of like a Tony Allen type, just bigger. And if you can ever get him to fucking hit a jump shot, dude. I mean, if this kid shot like even 36% from three, he'd be a first round pick easy. I totally expect him to be basically somewhere in the 40s to 60 range, probably like I would say no lower than like 55, but I totally think he'll get drafted. He may be a two-way player for a couple seasons, but I think he's going to be good. I do. I like the effort. All of the intangibles. It's just, can he get his shot together? A lot of interesting things going on. Of course, we're going to continue to follow it. We'll be covering the draft up to and during and after and all of that. So that'll be a lot of fun. Be sure to stay tuned for that in the coming weeks. And we're only like, 3 or 4 weeks away now. We're knocking on its door, dude. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Final topic of the night. Final thoughts on leading into the finals. Joel and I gave our thoughts last week, just to sum up mine. I think the Warriors will win in six, regardless of whether KD comes back or not. I do expect him to come back if it looks like, you know, that, you know, if they split on the road. I think he comes back. If Golden State goes and wins both on the road, he probably doesn't. Yeah, I think they win in six. I think if Toronto has any chance in hell, one, they need to cross their fingers that KD doesn't come back. Two, they have to lock down defensively. They have a very good defensive team, but they're going to need to really turn it up a notch. I do kind of like Kawhi guarding Draymond because he can protect the pick and roll, you know, and he can sag off Draymond when he's not in pick and roll and play help defense. It seems to be an interesting way to go about playing him. But, yeah, they got to be great defensively. And then my biggest thing is they have got to attack Golden State's weaker links. We saw how deep into that roster that Kerr went with against Portland. And, dude, they fucking played – 12, 13 different guys in a fucking game in some of those games. And it's just baffling. It's just like, damn, dude, you just fucking played everybody on your fucking on your active roster. You cannot let them do that. You've got to attack Quinn Cook when he's out there. You've got to attack Swedish Larry. Shout out to Bill Simmons on that one. Jonas Repko. You got to go after these guys. You cannot let those guys stay out on the court, because your best bet in beating this team is forcing all of those guys who are actually good to play 40 plus minutes a night. And if they can get by with playing 35 and you each, you know, and they can, you know, put these weaker players out there for spells at a time, you're going to get fucking – you're going to lose. You're not going to win. So those are the three big things. Probably the one other thing is just, like, kind of slow the pace down. Take the obvious transition buckets, but, like, don't make stupid passes to try and get a quick outlet in transition. You need to slow the pace of the game down. Don't let Golden State – don't try to get into a running contest with Golden State, because you're going to lose. That's a lot of things that I feel like Toronto has to do in order to pull this one out. I don't feel like they're going to be able to do all of them, hence why I have Golden State in six. But I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility that Toronto can pull this out. It's just going to take a Herculean effort. If you will. But yeah, what are your thoughts on this series before, you know, we get to sit down and watch it?
I think it'll be interesting. I don't know if Kevin Durant's necessarily going to play, just because I know he traveled with the team, but I just think, you know, just to see how it is and all that. But if I'm him and they're playing well, I don't think the way that Golden State looked the last time I saw him, it's going to be really hard to stop what they're doing. I mean, yeah, it was great numbers what Kawhi was able to do to Giannis and all that, but unless he's really just having other people step up with him and all that, you just looked at how the last two series, how overly dependent they are on Kawhi to do everything. I mean, it took him 40 shots to get through the 76ers. He didn't have to do as much last time. I mean, you're not going to get the Fred Van Leets shooting lights out in two games, only missing 3 3-pointers or something like that. That's not going to happen in the finals. I just don't see the other people stepping up, the Lowrys, the Siakams, the Gasols and all that, stepping up to do what a team that's been there the last, you know, this is the fifth year in a row. They know how to play. It's the same team. I have more confidence in Iguodala than I do really in the second player for Toronto right now, just because it's a whole yeah. different game. I mean, and I feel like Golden State, even right now, they have the, like, Cousins is active right now. I don't see Cousins having any help to them right now. Even if he's 100%, I just don't see that him. I think he's more of a minus right now getting into this team right now because he just doesn't fit it, what they're doing. And it's just run it the way you have. I mean, it's going to suck and all that. And, yeah, you might put a lot of strain on 5 to 6 guys and all that. I don't see them having to do what they did and going to, like, you know, 11 deep and all that. But I just feel like right now it's going to come. I could see the first game, Golden State shocking Toronto, even though it will be a good game. I see Golden State shocking them and winning. Then I have it in 6 as well. I wanted to do it earlier than that, but I do feel like Kawhi has shown that he is probably one of the best players right now. And he could definitely sway a game. And I could see, I mean, if like you said, his best option right now is playing Green and all that and trying to do that. But I could see him just being a smart player and not like Houston and D'Antoni and watching Curry murder you. I could just see him being like, all right, all of you guys, there's going to be a mismatch somewhere else, but you're not doing it, and I'm covering Curry. I'm just going to straight up just take him out. And all that. Like, he's not going to be able to stop Kevin Durant, but I just feel like Kevin Durant's cap injury is more than what it is, and I just feel like that's going to be his limitations rather than Kawhi doing what he did against Giannis to Kevin Durant. They're just two different players and all that. But I can definitely see Kawhi just being like, hey, I'm not letting Curry beat me. Like, he beat me one game, and I kind of sat back and let you guys do it, but not happening twice. So I can see him making it interesting. I mean, like you said, Toronto, there is that small chance where you play the series, you know, over a certain amount of time, and they oddly do win, like, you know, a good, like, 7 out of the 20. Like, there are those times where they can definitely win and all that. But I don't think it's right now. It's just Nick Nurse kind of looked a little lost. Not saying he's a bad coach and not saying he's bad for them, but he kind of just looked lost in the moment. And Kerr just being just this whole team, 5 years in a row, they know the whole parade. They hold them, like, they know everything, the whole theatrics behind it. And I think they're going to take care of business. And I unfortunately just think it's going to be without Kevin Durant. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I do think Kevin Durant makes them a way better team and all that. I just think the right now, the way that the last that I saw them, they've been sitting for a while. So they could have, like, you know, cold feet and all that and hadn't been. But the last that I saw them, they look really just in their stride. Just after game 6 of Houston, they just turned into a whole new beast.
Yeah, they really did. By the way, who's going to sneak a foot under Kawhi on a jump shot? Is it Swedish Larry? Is that who they're going to ask to do it this time?
No, I'm pretty sure they still got Zaza somehow in the book. They're like, yo, how did he still here? But we're bringing him back? Yes. It's going to be Zaza somehow.
Maybe you just pay for Zaza to have, like, a courtside seat so he could just sit there and stare at Kawhi to intimidate him.
It'll be interesting. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I do think Kawhi knew, but that Spurs team, that one year where he did get tripped, Kawhi was definitely, I mean, I do feel like if he didn't get hurt, I had a feeling that they were going to win. But that Spurs team's different than this Toronto team. That Spurs team is still kind of the last of the people that have been to the finals and have been there. So it was a well-rounded.
I don't think they're more talented.
Yeah. So, more experienced team. That's what I'm saying. They just kind of understood.
Yeah.
So it's a different team, and it's just they're just Toronto. It's the last two series that just showed me that they're a good team, but they're too heavily, like, riding on Kawhi and everything that Kawhi can do.
Yeah, no, I mean, ultimately, I agree with you. They're going to need at least two other guys to step up, and, you know, we'll see if that happens. I think you maybe already answered this question by saying you wanted to take it in less than 6, but you settled on 6. What do you think is more – what would shock you more, for Golden State to sweep them or for Toronto just to win the series?
Golden State to sweep them. I just feel like Toronto's not Portland, not anything against Portland and all that. And, you know, that's the last thing. But Toronto's actually, like, they do what I hope that they can get is good bench minutes out of a lot of people and try to just run that way. So I do see two games. I was contemplating it in five just because I could see Golden State, one of those games where they're losing the whole time and they just snuck it out at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I would be more surprised with a sweep. I think Toronto is going to get two. I really do. I think they'll get one at home and then maybe, like, win game five type of situation. Or maybe win, you know, one of the games in Golden State and then, you know, lose the last two or something. I feel hard-pressed to think it's going to go seven. But, hey, if it does, Toronto does have home court advantage. So I would fucking love for it to go seven. That'd be awesome. And you know what? I would, as much as I'm anti-Toronto because of, you know, what they did to the Sixers, I still would kind of like them to win it. I mean, it'd be great for the city of Toronto, especially given the utter collapse of the Maple Leafs. And you know, it would just be it'd be nice to for the Warriors to get humbled. It would be a treat. But you know, we'll see how it all plays out. I mean, if there's one guy that can do it, it's definitely Kawhi. All right, we're gonna wrap this thing up. But before we do, I do want to ask you, because there's been a lot of talk about this lately. Who's the best player in the league? We got Kawhi. We got KD. LeBron hadn't been in the playoffs this year, so it's almost like he didn't even count. We had Giannis in the mix until, you know, he went out. I think you got to throw Steph Curry in it based off what, you know, he did once KD went down. Who do you think right now, gun to your head, who do you think is the best player in the league right now?
Kevin Durant. Don't get me wrong. A lot of those guys you say are really good, and it's really hard just to just do a quick one like that. But I just everything that Kevin Durant can do offensively, and I think that we really just don't like. He's really underrated in his defensive game. He's not he's not a bad defensive player, but I just feel like
well, it doesn't
all of
help
those,
that he was just fucking lazy as shit this whole regular season, and he didn't play with
yeah.
any like intensity. And even in that
really
Clippers
did,
series, he was pretty lazy defensively. When he wants to be good defensively, he's really fucking good.
But Kevin Durant's definitely at that age. I mean, don't get me wrong, Steph can get a shot whenever he wants and all that. But if you have one of these guys that want to come up, like I said, a Kawhi could definitely shut him down and all that. But I just have the most faith in Kevin Durant. Is just he's going to get to his shot no matter what, and it's unstoppable.
Yeah.
I feel like next year we're really going to get the true value once he goes to his own organization, does things, and like really just like, oh, damn, well, this is Kevin Durant that we kind of forgot how dominant he is. So I'm just going to go Kevin. Don't get me wrong, Kawhi is definitely a better two-way player and all that, but I just feel like, I don't know, Kevin Durant right now would just destroy Kawhi. If he was healthy and was going a healthy – like Warriors team from like if they were running into the Warriors team of last year, what happened? LeBron and Kevin Durant just dismantled him. I just Kawhi being the great player he is, you're just not stopping KD, and he just knows it. I just feel like he's in his prime, and he just knows that I'm just unstoppable right now.
I agree with you. I think Kevin Durant is the best player in the NBA. I think Kawhi is second or third. I still put LeBron in that top three, even though, you know, he got hurt this year and obviously the team didn't make the playoffs. But I feel like there was a lot of shit going on in LA, as we discussed for the first half hour of this pod, that, you know, led to them not making the playoffs. In their dysfunction in general, but just in a vacuum, I still think LeBron is on that level. But I think those are your three guys right now that are just the three most well-rounded, crafted, best players in the league. LeBron obviously lacks a lot defensively that, you know, from where he used to be and even what Kevin Durant shows night to night and everything. But, I mean, you know, you put LeBron in, you know, a seven-game series, and he's going to flip that switch. He's going to turn it on defensively. Now, whether his teammates who have slacked off on defense all year, as we saw, you know, with Cleveland last year, are able to do that is a different story. But, yeah, I mean, he's still up there for me. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think Kevin Durant is just – like you said, he can get a shot anytime he wants to get it. He's so fucking tall. His wingspan's crazy. Where he releases his shot is just above everybody else's hands, anybody else's standing reach. And, you know, it makes it impossible to guard him. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, with Kawhi, as good as Kawhi is, like, you can affect him. You can make it difficult for him. You know, he hasn't really gotten shut down in these playoffs. He really struggled in that first game against Milwaukee, and there were a couple games in that Philadelphia series where Simmons and Butler did a really good job of slowing him down. But for the most part, he's gotten what he wants. But like you can't affect him. He's strong as fuck though. Like when he decides he's getting to the paint and he's got that finesse move where he can kind of bully you and bump you back, but not draw the charge and then back up and take the floater. Like that move is so fucking solid. But like, yeah, dude, KD, he just, the only thing that could possibly stop KD is just KD. Like, KD just being off. Because nobody is going to guard him. The only person that I think could act, there's two people who I think maybe could guard him. And one would be Kawhi, the other would be Giannis, just because of Giannis's length. But, yeah, I mean, he's so fucking good. But I'll tell you this, if the Raptors end up winning the series, I definitely think Kawhi at least gets the moniker. Because if you beat the Warriors, I don't give a fuck if they got KD or not. If you beat the Warriors with the guys you got on that Toronto team, you get the mantle. You're at least for next season, going into next season, he's the best player in the league. But yeah, I'm with you though. As of right now, I would go KD, and I think the narrative would still be the majority would still pick KD if he hadn't gotten hurt, because KD's blueprint would still be all over the series that they've played, instead of it going transitioning back to their share the ball, strength in numbers kind of format. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I think next year we should probably do like I don't want to do like an expansive list, but like a top 20 or something. Preseason top 20 best players in the league. That'd be fun. Anyway, Luke, always a pleasure, man. Appreciate you joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me. Peace out.
Peace, brother. And thank you guys for joining us tonight. It's a fun podcast. We hope you enjoy it. We got some more great content coming your way later this week. Obviously, we got some finals games that we'll be breaking down next Tuesday and Thursday. We will eventually get to our awards for the season. We were planning on doing that tonight, but unfortunately Joel and Juwan had conflicts, so we had to postpone, but we will get to that eventually. Be sure to check out Wrestling Geeks Alliance this Saturday, a special Saturday edition of WGA with Dane and Chris, and Geek Vibes Live will be coming at you Sunday. We have some other great shows this week. Geeks Against the Grain on Friday, and TS Top 10 Saturday morning, so be sure to check those out as well. We'll catch you next week. Until then, peace.